You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
This week on the Serious Side.
Good evening, everyone. I'm pleased that Senator Reid and I in the White House have been able to come to an agreement that will, in fact, cut spending and keep our government open. And I expect that the House will vote tonight on a short-term continuing resolution into next week to allow for time for this agreement to be put together in a legislative form and brought to the floor of the House and Senate for a vote.
While the national unemployment rate falls to a three-year low, one group is still in crisis mode, and that is the African-American community. For them, the national unemployment rate is expected to reach a 25-year high.
Are there more black men in jail or in college?
That's a good question.
Jail. More black men in jail.
Not the same jail. Jail.
Good morning and welcome to the Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Chance Cafe, right here on the TJRS Radio Network.
Good Sunday morning to you folks, and welcome to the Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Cafe every Sunday right here on the TJRS Radio Network. And before we get into it, today is April 10th, and let me wish my brother Jason Nevels a very happy birthday. Love you, brother, and hope you have many more. My name is Shane, of course. I'm the host of the Serious Side, along with many others. Let me introduce them to you. First up, he is the host of the J. Ryle Show. He's a TJRS contributor, and he's a contributor here as well. Let's say good morning to Mr. Elias. Good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, sir. How are you this morning?
Doing great, man. I'm doing great. I can't wait to get into the conversation this morning, and I'm glad that you're here.
Me too, sir.
Next up, she is the author of the book Pregnant in the Spirit. She's also the host of the True Purpose Development Show. She's one of the hosts of the J. Ryle Show and a co-host on Ladies First Radio and a TJRS contributor. Let's say good morning to Dr. Princess Aldea. Good morning, ma'am. How are you?
Yeah, wonderful. Good morning to you. And good morning to Mr. Elias.
Good morning, Doctor. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Have a great show on tap for you. She is the host of Adam, Where Art Thou? She's also the author of Single Mothers, The New Father. Let's say good morning to Miss Kathleen Williams. Good morning, Kathleen. How are you?
This morning, ready to go.
All right, good. Well, we have a great conversation on tap for you. We have great things to talk about. Let's get into it. First up, the government shutdown. Now, if you've been listening to the news for the past week, the government passed a bill at the midnight hour, saving the government from shutting down. And so the question is, for people who really don't follow these things closely, Mr. Elias, I mean, really, was it that important for the common American to know that this drama was playing out in Washington?
Well, yes, it was very, very important, man. It affected not just all the government workers, man, but it affected a large part of the system that we want to run. I mean, the CIA, I mean, a lot of things was going to be shut down because of it. People would get, I mean, checks were not going to be cut. I mean, it affected a large amount of people that was just not in the government sector, but in the private sector, too.
Well, Kathleen, I guess the question is that I understand that, and, you know, of course, as someone who's, you know, educated and following these things, they definitely would have an opinion on it, and they would definitely be concerned, but I'm talking about the average American. To the average American, this looks like, you know, Republicans and Democrats fighting over something, and I don't think people really and truly knew what was at stake when all the drama was going on in Washington, let's say you.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Jay, and I think this goes back to a conversation we had a couple of weeks ago, political theater, and some of it is exactly that, political theater. On a serious note, yes, we definitely are involved in a very serious crisis economically in this country, and people are losing their jobs. A lot of this discussion they did not have. the things that are already happening. So sometimes when I look at what's going on in the news, I think that they put it out there as a distraction from, you know, so that people don't really understand what's going on elsewhere. And you don't have to really pay attention. But I do think that the average American is petrified when they look at all of this and then they see the gas prices going up and it seems to, like, justify some things on the other side. Okay, well, if the government doesn't shut down, they'll raise the gas prices, so let me tolerate $4 and change a gallon, you know, and maybe that'll help the government from shutting down. I think they want to stress us out unnecessarily and give us some information that we really just don't need.
You know, Dr. Ozilia, you know, one of the reasons why there was such this back and forth between Democrats and Republicans, one of the major sticklers in the budget was the Planned Parenthood. Republicans wanted to rescind funding for that particular organization, and it became a situation where the Republicans at the last minute decided, you know what, we don't want this on our watch. We don't want to be in a situation where we are shutting down the federal government because of our ideas and our beliefs. What say you?
Well, I think that they were very brilliant in making that decision because they're although they're playing a very, very close game with their antics during the tenure of our President Barack Obama, really just for personal sake, their personal dislike as far as I'm concerned, they are still trying to fight in their minds with a purpose. They feel they have a point, and they have a reason for doing what they're doing. But in this case, it just would have really solidified that they are really just trying to make a point of their dislike to President Barack Obama. I think them dragging it out in something as serious as this here, I think that they would have definitely made another announcement to the world, and they knew that. So to save themselves and to continue to be able to be in their little run in the ring with their attacks on President Barack Obama and using the American citizens playing with our lives, they decided to go ahead and cash in this time. So we were blessed, okay? So, yeah, it's pretty sad, but they knew what they were doing.
You know, Mr. Elias, one of the reasons why the Republicans were targeting Planned Parenthood is because, according to the Republicans, they say it's against the law for the U.S. government to fund abortions. And even though that's a very small part of what Planned Parenthood does, there are so many good things that Planned Parenthood does. So I think the reason why the Republicans pivoted from this because the Democrats started making some headway with the American people saying, okay, do you want to shut down a place where people can plan parenthood, where they are in a situation where they can plan pregnancies, where they're in a situation where they can help women find cervical cancer and things of this nature? I think that's one of the main reasons why the Republicans backed down. What do you think?
Well, I got to agree with you on that one, Jay. And Republicans generally don't look at the complete picture. They'll target one iota of what's going on and what they're trying to do, and they don't really take a general ball of what's going on in that organization. Just like the ACORN, you know, they said that they were this, they were that, they were this, they were that, and they just took that one spectrum of the ACORN and they targeted that. Whereas they need to look at the broad spectrum of what this organization does, and that's a general trait of the Republicans.
You know, Kathleen, is it fair, though, I know this is a part of the legislative process, but really, I mean, should people use their pet peeve projects and things of that nature to slap into a bill, and that one little thing could prevent the bill from passing? I mean, think about that. We talk about our government is, you know, it sets the example throughout the world, blah, 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 but come on, think about that process. Don't you think that's just a little bit Bush League and back office?
But that's what politics is, Jay. I mean, literally, that is what politics is. They're not in there. You know, we think that we elect people of integrity people with morals and people with justice in their heart that truly care about the American people to go into the political amphitheater and work with our best interests in heart. Regardless of whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, we expect that you're going to do exactly what you said and look at the big picture and make sure that you are not destroying programs that are working for the better of the American people. That is not what they do. They go in there and they work for the interests that are putting them in office and keeping money in their pocket. It happens every single day. So when they go in there and they go in to promote the best interests of the Republican Party so that they can get more money from people who support people who run on the Republican ticket, that's what they're doing. And they look at this just like, you know, as the cops do at a certain period of time, you're going to get more tickets at the end of the month because they have to make a certain quota. These guys and women have to make a quota, and that's what they're out there to do. They don't care. So they, when they went after the Planned Parenthood, they went after Acorn, they go after people because of one thing that they did wrong or one thing that they disagree with, they're doing that intentionally. And the only time they pull back is when it's going to backfire and you know, make them look bad in a way that they don't want to tolerate. That's it. I don't know.
11 minutes after the hour, it's the Serious Side of the TGRS Adventure Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network. And we're talking about, we're talking about the government shutdown, or a potential government shutdown. We're talking about, were you concerned? Did it even matter to you for those? And I think that's why we are really focusing on this, because, you know, we talk as if, listen, we're everyday Americans. You know, we're not political pundits. We just talk about things that affect us. And so the bottom line is, were you concerned about that? Now, Mr. Daly, as we talk about the government shutting down, people didn't realize that, you know, national parks would be shut down. All types of services would be shut down. Now, my question is this, and we have the Tea Party faithful, the Tea Party freshmen who came into the Congress were saying, look, shut it down. We don't care. Shut it down. There's no compromise. How can you sit here and you only control one piece of the government because you have the House, the Senate, and the White House? How can you sit here and say it's my way or the highway?
Well, that's what they've been saying all along, Jay. I mean, that's nothing new as what the Tea Party's been doing. They've been saying it's my way or the highway for the longest. And I'm sorry, but a lot of people are starting to cow down to them because they're picking up more and more steam on the elections, man. If you look at it, the Republicans, some of these Republicans ran on that ticket as far as, you know, what they wanted, and they cowed down to them. And right now, they're running on some of their what they gave to them in their campaign promises, man. So that's the way they keep saying it's our, we want our country back. It's ours. It's ours. It's ours. Hey, look, with the new country, the country didn't go anywhere. So when you say you want your country back, where are you taking your country back to? That's what gets me about the Tea Party. So,
well, who are they taking the country back from? The African-American president that sits in the White House? That might be it. Just real quick, I know you didn't come to me, Jay, but just to throw this out there, this conversation and all that's going on in the news really should not be one that petrifies or further alienates the people of America from the political amphitheater. This is what should draw people in, because your votes really do matter. Everybody in politics is not operating like this. And if they have a tendency towards operating this way, if you threaten them with votes, substantial votes, and you're pulling people together and saying, hey, look, we're watching you, they will not be able to operate this way. Because just like you have the Tea Party, you have folks on the other side, and they will move when people say move.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct, and I definitely understand your point there. I mean, and so we always talk about the importance of voting, but here's the deal, you know, but here's a country who elected a former pro wrestler to be a governor of one of its states. Here's a country who voted an actor to be a governor of one of its states. I mean, when you sit back and think about this, I know the election process is what it is, Dr. Princess Audea, but can we really trust the American people to make the right decisions by voting some of these characters into office?
So I think first that it's not
fair to assume that via one position as an entertainer or whatever it is that you've decided to do, an actor or whatever, that automatically places you in that box and that's all that you can do, thereby you're not capable of being a governor. I think that's unfair to presume that, first. Secondly, in every case, there is a background. Look at their credentials. I'm sure there is something apparently that warranted them to get into that position. And a lot of times, it could be the fact that the state by which they ran office, they were just simply tired. They were tired of the traditional resume that is usually presented, the one that has all of the political credentials, et cetera. Therefore, they chose to consider something else. You know, I mean, you know the saying. It's an insane person who continues to do the same thing over and over again. And I think there are some people that are just trying to reach for sanity and an opportunity for change. So they consider other options. But we cannot, it's not fair to just presume that because they were an actor or because they were a businessman and not ever in politics, that for some reason they are not capable to run office. I believe that is very unfair, especially if we are saying that what we're looking for, we're looking for justice. We're looking for things to be run in a way that is proper and fair to all of the citizens in America or the particular state that you are running in for office.
16 minutes after the hour, it's the Serious Side of the TGRS. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS radio network. Now, let's go back and we talk about, you know, credentials and things of that nature. I mean, the results speak for themselves. Look at the state of California after Arnold Schwarzenegger did what he did. Look what happened to Minnesota after Jesse Ventura was the governor. I don't think it's a situation where we're saying people can't make the adjustment and learn how to do things. But I'm like this. I want the best person available to do the job. And because you have name recognition, Kathleen, that's why most of these people were voted into office. It's not based on their credentials. It's not based on what they've done in their history. I mean, come on. The only thing I think as far as Governor Ventura, maybe he came into the ring with a business suit on in a briefcase. That was his only credential as far as being governor. But the bottom line is he was voted in because of name recognition. That's not fair.
I don't know that it was even name recognition, Jay. I think it might have been money, you know, and that's really what seems to be running political campaigns these days. And, you know I'm not going to come down on them because Mama B really couldn't stand here and say that she's not capable of being in political office. You know, I am an actor. So I definitely agree with Dr. Princess Adelia when she says, you know, we can't judge based on that. But definitely, when we look at the city of New York, Michael Bloomberg spent more on the mayoral election than people used to spend in presidential elections in order to run the city. And he is a businessman, not a politician. And a lot of people have issues with the way he's running New York City. New York City is a business, yes. Every city-state is a business, yes. But definitely it's not a business that should look only at the benefits of the wealthy. So we're very concerned here in New York about some of the decisions that are being made and how the elections are being run. So I think it's really money. And it's becoming more and more and more of that, which is another reason why we have to get out and vote and start looking at campaign donations and making our, you know, stand about every person who's qualified to go into politics should be able to have entry and not left out simply because they don't have millions upon millions of dollars to put into an election so that they can buy the office. That's what they're doing.
19 minutes after the hour. Mr. Elias, here's the thing. Now, we talk about this whole thing with the potential government shutdown. I think we all are saying, thank God it didn't happen, because so many things would have been affected by that move. Things that, first of all, our soldiers would have been in limbo with their paychecks. I mean, the bottom line is that they just can't walk off the job. They would have to continue to do what they do. And in some cases, federal employees may not have never recuperated the funds that they lost, that they would potentially lose during a shutdown. But my question is this, that had it happened, Who do you think would have shouldered the blame, the brunt of the blame for this particular situation? The Democrats, the Republicans, or President Obama?
I think all three, man. I think all three. Because you're gonna have people to the left saying they would have blamed people to the right, they would have blamed, and you're gonna have a Tea Party who's just gonna blame President Obama no matter what. So all three would have been a loss, man. And I mean, you would have had equal blame throughout the whole thing. I mean, it depends on who was reporting the news at that time, whether it be Fox News or MSNBC, who was gonna take the brunt of the blame, man. So I mean, some people are going to stand strong on their beliefs and say, look, they stood for what I believe in, so I'm glad they shut it down. And then some people are going to say, well, I don't get paid, so this is their fault. So all three of them would have shouldered the blame on this.
There are polls out there. Now, I tell you what, the Tea Party's blaming the Speaker of the House, and they're saying that come November, we are going to vote you out because the bottom line is that you're not standing up for our principles. What say you, Dr. O'Day?
Well, I you know what, I say that at this point, we have, I mean, what can we say to that? It is what it is. If there's, I mean, we have to stand up, just as we're saying here today. It's important for us to vote and to fight for what we know is right. At the same time, we are fighting with, it's almost like an endless cycle. We were dealing with the political theater, the political position that we're currently in. So, I mean, what can you say? It is what I understand the question to be as it was.
Yeah, Kathleen, you know, we say that, I mean, Mr. Elias is saying that everyone would shoulder the blame differently, but there's a poll out there that says most people would blame Democrats. Republicans the most. Democrats second and President Obama the third. The reason why people think the polls are playing out that way is because they felt that President Obama probably was the only adult in the room during this process. He kept himself above the fray. And he came out saying the common sense things that normal people would want to hear. Do you agree with that? And do you think that's the reason why the president, out of this new poll that's out there, he showed the least blame throughout this nonsense? What say you?
Well, one question I need to ask you first, though, is what do you mean, who is going to be to blame? Who is who? You know, who's
right,
gonna
right, exactly. Well, we were talking to, you know, when you go to the American people, and you ask the American people, okay, if the government shuts down, who's at fault? And I think the poll said 36% would blame Republicans. I think the other 25% would blame Democrats, and I think there was a very low percentile for the president. So it's like, well, the president is coming out of this thing smelling like roses, even though a lot of people would think that he would be blamed because this happened on his watch.
Yeah, and I agree with that, you know, because this would have been one of the first times that the entire government shut down. So ultimately, and those polls are always swayed, you know what I mean? I never trust them. If they are in favor of the president, it's to throw you off. So when they come out with the real poll, the president would have been the blame. I just don't trust them. But, you know, the logical thing would be to say, yes, the American people would have blamed through the Republican Party. Because we see that everything that was suggested to them that seemed to make sense, they were saying absolutely not, we want the opposite, or we want more, or we want this, or, you know, or it looked as though they were pushing for the shutdown because they just wouldn't agree with the president. So, you know, logically, and looking at this, and if the polls were accurate, then I would say, yeah, the Republican Party would have been to blame. Now, the other reason I say that they probably think that they also would have been to blame is because they want to win this election in 2012. They're on a right, you know, fast track right now because they have more positions in office right now. They took over a lot of Democratic seats in the last few elections. So they want to go whole hog. They want the presidency, and they want the House, and they want the Senate. So, yeah, they said, okay, you know what, we can't risk this right now because it might affect us in 2012. So let's back down and make sure the government doesn't shut down because folks might blame us. It really is a game. That is a game, although what they're doing and how they are operating with regards to the American people, this is not a game to us. This is our livelihood. This is our money. This is food on our table. It's our home. You know, our jobs. This isn't funny. So they, you know, they realize when they get to the ninth hour that they better back down or else they'll be to blame, meaning that they'll lose the election. That's all that, you know, we got to look at the bottom line.
Mr. Elias, your thoughts?
Well, I got to agree with Kathleen on that one, but, you know, something was shared earlier, man, that just really resonated with me when we were talking, and we are playing. I mean, this is political politics, man. This is, I mean, at its best. And, I mean, if the Tea Party is unhappy with John Boehner at this point in time, I bet he's gonna. I bet one thing he's gonna step and fetch it at this point in time because he doesn't want to lose that. He doesn't want to lose his political power that he has right now. So we got. It's gonna be very interesting to see how this works out because Boehner has probably never faced a foe like this before, where they're not very relentless. If they say I'm gonna come after you, they're not gonna stop. So I'd like to see how this is gonna play out for him.
Yeah, a lot of the Republicans, especially Boehner, he was around with, not a lot of the Republicans I misspoke, but Boehner was around when the government had a shutdown in the 90s. And he's saying to these young guys, look, bottom line is we can't afford to have this happen because you do not want to. Because immediately after that happened, they lost it. They lost the House and the Senate after that whole situation. And Newt Gingrich was the Speaker of the House at the time, and he actually called in to the Republican caucus and said, look, you don't want this to happen on your watch. Dr. Prince, the last word on the set.
Well, I will say this, that we have to take note of what has happened in the past. I'm glad you brought that up because that was going to be something that I thought should be discussed. What happened before, we should take big note and also take a look at what happened and why the Republicans made the choice that they made this time. Let's not ever take slack because they did decide to save us the misery this time. It is all strategy. It is all strategy. And they do want us to have their vote. They want our vote. And we have to be very, very cautious. Everyone, just as Kathleen said earlier, we have to really get involved so that we can understand what's going on, so that we can make an impact by making the right choices the next time that it is time for us to vote in 2012. It's very important.
Well said. Well, show starting off with a bang as usual. And I tell you what, this fight is not over. That was a temporary stay. They will take this probably in the next coming weeks. All right, folks, sit back and relax. Coming up next, we're talking about the unemployment rate. It went down last month, but it went up for us. Let's talk about it. It's the serious side. It's Sunday. It's the serious side of the Jay Rouse Show. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is your resident, not from the South, Bonta LaMadonna. Kickstarting your weekend every Friday with Ladies First Radio, the Jay Rouse Show. A show for women, by women. Tune in every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as my co-host, Princess Odelia, and I discuss everyday issues and offer inspirational solutions. From the East Coast, to the West Coast, to all over the world, Ladies First Radio keeps it real, spreading positivity, one show at a time. So come be uplifted with Ladies First Radio, the Jay Rouse Show, every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Ladies First Radio, the Jay Rouse Show. A show for women, by women.
Thank you. Now, over the past 10 years, for every Caucasian person that's been unemployed, there are 2 African Americans looking for work.
What I know is a very stressful situation for most people. The most people can do right now is pray and be very diligent in their efforts to try to find jobs and try to utilize all the resources within their communities and folks that they know.
Welcome back. It's 33 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Serious Side of the TJRS. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TJRS Radio Network. We're talking about the unemployment rate. Now, the national unemployment rate last month dropped to its lowest rate in 3 years. It was at 8.8%. However, especially amongst African-American men, the employment rate for African-Americans rose to 16.5%. So now I'll start this set off with you, Kathleen. I mean, what's the reason? What's going on here? I mean, how can the national average drop, but the average amongst our people continue to go up? What say you?
You know, it's a frightening situation, Jay. I'm really very concerned about this because not only does it translate into a lot of other things, you'd be shocked at the number of foreclosures I'm defending for African-American families, men who are losing their homes or in litigation to lose their homes because of the fact that they either lost their job or they are underemployed. And it's impacting black men across the spectrum. It's not just black guys who are working at, you know, McDonald's or working in blue-collar jobs that are losing their jobs. You know, it's lawyers, it's, you know, doctors are trying to find alternative ways of working. It's really very bad. Now, how does it happen that it goes down for the country and it goes up for black men? It happens that, you know, there's a lot of situations. Last hired, first fired, who's got the least experience, who's got the least connections, who are they able to just white out without really having a big argument because they know that person won't be able to sue. You know, what happens for the African-American community, we are always or usually on the end of the stick where the worst results are happening, whether it's health care, whether it's joblessness, whether it's homelessness, foreclosures, you name it, it impacts us hardest. And for our families right now, that's our black men. And it's something that really needs to be addressed. It really is very serious.
I'll pose a question to you, Mr. Elias. I mean, well, why is that so? Why are we in a situation where, once again, the unemployment rate goes down nationally, but for us in our community, it goes up, especially amongst African-American men? What do you think the problem is?
Say it's the reason that they want to get rid of, and they have gotten rid of, I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's way higher.
Get rid of affirmative action?
Thank you. That's what I'm looking for. That's the reason why they wanted to get rid of it. And I mean, affirmative action had its pluses, it had its minuses, but the biggest plus it had was that you had to hire a certain amount of minorities. And It's all a game plan to me to get rid of the minorities because they want to hire who they want to hire. Now, if you put that in place, if you put that back in place, you know, I always had what people would say is reverse discrimination and this and that and this and that. But hey, if the playing field was level from the beginning, we wouldn't have to ever put it in place. So I think that has a large part to do with it.
37 minutes after the hour is the Serious Side, right here on the TJRS Radio Network. We're talking about the high unemployment amongst African-Americans, especially African-American men. Now, in fairness to, and I'll represent the other half here because I like to play devil's advocate in these situations, Dr. O'Dea. You know, I am an HR professional by trade, and, you know, when I look at resumes, I don't see black or white on resumes. So is it a situation where, first of all, the resume has to get you in the house in most cases? So now because of the unemployment rate, we're so overwhelmed. I think I put out a job posting to hire 15 people, and my God, I received thousands of resumes. There's no way I'm going to be able to go through all of them. But the resume is what gets you in the house. So there's no way we can determine what the race of that person is there. So is it really all about people not hiring African Americans because of their color, or is it a situation that they're just unqualified?
Ooh, I have so much to say, Jay.
Well, go ahead. Take 7 minutes.
Okay. Well, first, I want to say this.
I know that we're looking at the polls and we're seeing the increase with regards to our black race, our race. However, I would just really be curious to know, how is that per race? Okay, what are the ratios per race, first of all? I know ours went up, but who else's went up? And then if you look at a certain sector, we all, you know, there are more out there than just the whites. There are different ethnicities. So, no, I should, yeah. So we have to, I would love to look at that. Look at, take a certain sector of a certain type of race, a certain community, and look at theirs. Okay, how did they increase or decrease? That's first thing. So I know it's alarming and ours went up and there's red flags. With regards to the resume, I don't believe that it's necessarily a black, white thing or anything like that. I beg to differ so much in across the board. And I say that because, in any case, just as you indicated there, you got 1,000 resumes. It's no way you're going to have an opportunity to look and dissect each one. Unfortunately, there's a lack of education many times in how to fill out a resume. You have the anxieties and everything, and people are putting things down that are just a little bit too much information. If you have that much to look at, learn how to prepare a resume that is going to catch the eye of the people that are in review of your resume. I just do not want us to focus on the assumption that it is our race that has had the increase and it is something personal to the black race. I do not want us to hold ourselves there. I think it's a bigger picture than that.
Okay. 347-850-1372 is the call-in number. We definitely encourage you to call in and be a part of the conversation right now. We're talking about the unemployment rate amongst African Americans. Why is it so high when the nation's is starting to creep down? And we've had a number of opinions on to why that is so. And I'll pose the same question to you, Kathleen, because I'm definitely curious to hear what you have to say. When we talk about the African American community not being employed or not having the same opportunities as our white counterparts, I mean, you guys heard the lead-in. For every one person that's unemployed, that's white, and there are two African Americans. So, but it goes back to my question to you is the resume question. I mean, the bottom line is that you use the resume. Usually, the resume is the first line of defense. People look at resumes to determine whether or not they want to continue to have a conversation with a potential employee. So, the resumes are black and white, and I'm talking about as far as ink and paper, not color. So, could the situation be where we just do not have the credentials to compete or to compete with our white counterparts in some cases?
Well, listen, I think Tyquan, Jamar, Jamel. Daquan, I think that they may have some skills and maybe they don't have some skills, but I definitely know that if we're screening, and you can answer this best with your experience in HR. If we're screening, we sometimes do know who's black. I'm not trying to suggest that they say, okay, well, this person's black, I don't want to hire them, but I think in some instances it just might happen. I also do agree with Dr. Adelia that with whether you are African American or Latino or whatever, there may be a lot of other things in your resume, not just grammatical errors, but, okay, if you want to take me, for example, Kathleen Williams, you may not know that the majority of the Kathleen Williams in the world are white, actually, but not as many of them had worked at Neighborhood Youth Corps. Not many of them worked for the, NAACP or had an internship with an African-American congressman. There's ways. If we want to determine who's black and who's white, you can look at a lot of the places. You know, I went to Howard University. I don't want to put that on black on my resume, but I went to Howard. Yeah, you know, there's a good likelihood that I'm a black person. Maybe not, but, you know, the likelihood is about 99.8%. So I think there is ways to decipher whether you're black or white from your resume. And then when you get down to the skills and so forth, and I'm just going to throw this out real quick.
when I was, this was some years ago, on a website called Black People Meet. Now, I happen to be on there for business, but a lot of people are on there for dating. You had to write. You had to write, Lot. I was on it today. But anyway, you had to write back and forth to people. And we had, it, you know, the emails that I received, half of them I couldn't decipher. These brothers could not write a sentence. And I'm telling you, if you look at the resume, you look at the essays that they write and so forth, their own description, the grammar was just appalling. So I think this is something that we have to go back to with regards to education. I bring it up every week. We're looking at schools, we're looking at education, we're looking at skills to make sure that we're using absolutely everything that we can use to make sure that we can put ourselves in the best spot, because no matter what, we are still going to be the first out and not in. So we want to make sure that if we are doing something ourselves that's preventing us from keeping those jobs, that we eliminate that so we can have better footing in this environment. Because, listen, whatever is against you right now, we don't need it.
You know, she brings up a very good point. 44 minutes after the hour, it's a serious sign, broadcasting live on the TJR's radio network. Michelle, yes, she brings up a good point, but I know that, you know, just because of the fact that I went through a round where I interviewed over 100 people, and, you know, it was amazing to sit down and talk to people who look like me and listen to their interviewing skills. And, you know, trust me, you know, my interviews, what I try to do in interviews, I try to make people comfortable. I don't want people to come in and give me interview answers to my interview questions. So what I try to do is I take a different approach to really see if I get a person relaxed enough, I can somewhat fill them out a little bit. That's just my technique. Hey, whether it works or not, that's your opinion. I like it. I like to do it that way. But here's the deal. What I notice interviewing a lot of my people, they just like what Kathleen just said. I mean, they can't talk, they can't write, and it's like, oh my God, this is a sad state of affairs. So can we sit here and say, it's, you know, because we always like to say the man is doing things to us, but like Kathleen says, we always talk about education, and education is a common denominator in a lot of these things that are wrong with the African-American community. What do you say in regards to that?
I agree 100% on that one, Jay, and education is the key to everything that we're doing and in the job situation. But the bottom line is what background did they come from? You know, some of these people don't have anything to rely on. Some of these people don't have mentors to rely on. Some of these people don't have somebody they can go to and talk to. I mean, there's plenty of classes out there that will teach you how to interview. But how many people know that? How many people set themselves up? I mean, the internet is a vast amount of information. And if you don't have internet access, there's always a library to teach you how to do to create interviewing skills. So, I mean, maybe if you don't know, you just don't know, man. You've never been taught, you've never been taught. But the bottom line is, you know, we're not trying to level playing field. It's always an unlevel playing field that we're playing in because we don't know these things and nobody's ever taught us these things.
Now, one of the things we're going to talk about next week, and I want to definitely touch on it this morning, and thanks to Seth Goddard for this information. I noticed it in the chat room. I said, you know what, this would be a very good topic for one of the topics for next week's show, name discrimination. And I know this is a very sensitive topic, but I will touch on it a little bit because I definitely want to save the brothers a conversation for next weekend. But, you know, Kathleen brought it up when she led off with one of the answers to one of my questions, what she said to Quan and Shaniqua and all these different things. I mean, we as parents, should we not say, okay, listen, I want my word to be prepared, and I'm just asking the question before everyone jumps on me. But we as parents, shouldn't we say, look, we want our kids to be prepared to compete in life? Shouldn't we take that into consideration when we name our kids? And I'll just throw that out there to you, Dr. O'Dea.
Yes, we should. Okay. I really think so. I have heard of some homemade names that, I mean, even myself as an employer, I have one of my employees one time, she did have a name that was really, it was literally unprofessional. And I asked her, I said, I mean, no offense, but we don't, I'm not, my clients are of all races. what is your middle name? And she gave me that, and I said, that's what you will be in my office. Are you fine with that? And I did that because a lot of times it stops things at the door. And I can speak, and I'm sure many of us here on the panel can speak to that. It can be a corporate stigma, honestly. And that is, and it was just the name was just unprofessional. I don't know what her parents were thinking about when they named her that. So I think that it is important for us to take that into consideration. It really is.
Right. 48 minutes after the hour is the Serious Side of the TGRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Jazz Cafe. We invite you to be a part of the conversation, 347-850-1272. You can call us with your comments or opinions or questions, whatever you'd like to say. The phone lines are wide open. We're talking about unemployment in the African-American community. We're talking about how the rate from a national perspective is falling, but amongst our people, it continues to go up. And we're talking about what we're discussing right now is some of the reasons why there may be some. And so, Kathleen, I want to direct this thing back to you and ask you this question. Now, when we sit down and really try to break all this down, is it fair to say, can we make the declaration this morning that the reason why African Americans are not being hired, if we had to put a percentile on what we would say the majority of the reasons why we're not being hired is our fault, or are the majority of the reasons we're not being hired is because of the color of our skin? What say you?
You know, that's a really good question. And I think without numbers in front of me, I wouldn't be willing to make that call. But if you're just asking my opinion, I'm going to say, based on the people that I have interacted with in the workplace, and that is, you know, I'm an attorney, I'm also a nurse. And I'm not just looking at African-American attorneys or nurses, but the people that I worked with who were in jobs above me and below me. And I'm going to have to say that the majority would have to be not our fault. The majority of the folks I've worked with in the workplace were professional. They came to work dressed professionally. They could read and write adequately. They were very, very hardworking individuals. And I don't think that a lot of times when they lost their jobs that it was their fault or that they should have and that the best person was retained. I don't necessarily think that every workplace that I've ever worked in was racist either. I really do think that there's a subtlety to racism, and I do think also that there is, in other words, I do believe that a lot of times people are put out, they don't think that they are firing the person because they're black, but that many times there are instances where people really do hold judgments and stereotypes to heart, and it just so happens that the person that they want to get rid of is a black person, and they don't necessarily think in their heads that they're doing it because of that.
Yes, that's a very, very interesting point, and I think that reminds me and gives me an idea for another topic for next week. So this has been very productive this morning, getting ideas for next week's show. 347-850-1272 is our calling number. It's the Serious Side. It's Sunday on the TGRS Radio Network. Now, let me ask you a question, Ms. Taliesin, because I think that, you know, once again, one of the things I never, ever, ever try to do is play the race card unless it's absolutely necessary. One of the things that I always try, and I still listen and teach this to my daughters, is that don't use crutches. You know, the reason why I'm here is because of this. And what I want you to do is be able to finish that sentence and say, give me the real reason. Don't say the reason why you're here is because so-and-so did this to me. Could it be the fact that you did it to yourself? And so the question is that when you think about this, I know there are a lot of, you know, I read a lot of things online. I see, you know, you ask young African-American kids what they want to be when they grow up. And in some cases, more than most, you see, well, I want to be a football player when I grow up. I want to be a basketball player when I grow up. I want to be a singer when I grow up. But then when you look at some of the profiles of some of young white kids and Asian kids, you know, you hear things like, well, I want to be a doctor when I grow up. When I grow up, I want to be an engineer and things of this nature. You're saying to yourself, okay, this starts at a very young age. Should we try to push our kids in directions that we know that they are more inclined to be successful than others? What say you?
Well, Jay, they can be successful in anything that they do, you know, and
sure.
I mean, we For example, some of my fraternity brothers came to town this weekend. We went out to a restaurant, and we went to a restaurant. It was seven of us sitting at a table, and this lady walks over to us and said, "Oh my God, are you guys basketball players or football players?" And we looked at her, and she's like, "Why do we have to be this or that?" She says, "Because you're in this restaurant." Now, I took total offense to that because, you know, I don't have to be any of these things. And then we started a conversation at the table. You know, why couldn't some of us then just, you know, we're surgeons or we're professors or we're this? It's worse because it's a stereotype of the black man. You know, it's a stereotype that this is the only thing that we can do. I talked to a guy that I work with, and he's teaching his son. He's got him into violin, and he's got his other kids into ballet and all these other things. Man, we have to broaden our spectrum and just stop pigeonholing ourselves and saying that we're only good in athletics. Well, we're good at anything we put our minds to, and that resorts back to me, to the parents, where you're saying, I'm letting my kids I'm opening their minds up to anything. Not just the sports, not just this. I want my kid to be whatever they want to be. And I want to give them every advantage that they can have instead of saying it's just going to be a basketball player, a rapper, or a football player. We need to go into different directions, man.
I just want to know if all of you guys were tall, that's all.
Yeah, the majority of us were over 6 feet. Yeah, everybody was over 6 feet tall.
But,
yeah.
You know, I have a little bit of a past.
go ahead, Dr. D.
I just want to say this. I mean, a lot of times, you know, we have to understand that the reality of the truth is a little bit too much to swallow sometimes. When we look at the success rate within our race, and especially when it comes to men, predominantly we are very high on the ranks in the entertainment industry, and we're also high on the ranks when it comes to basketball and football. That's our dominant. There are other races where I'm sure some of you can look at some races. I'm not going to call them out because I don't want to bring any prejudice, but I'm just trying to bring out the point of the truth of the stereotype. They're doctors. And you just about know it, and that's what their families groom them to become, primarily, doctors. They eat certain foods because it stimulates the brain and increases their ability, enhances their ability in math and science. You have some people that, you know, they're doing the lawn, et cetera. So that is the dominant. And you're right, Mr. Elliott, we do have to really broaden the opportunity for our children. We have to do that. But we must also take into consideration the urban community as well as other low-income communities and realize the resources that they do have. They may tell you on the news and tell you in the city-county buildings that these things are available for you, and oftentimes within the urban communities, they have nonprofit organizations that will fund your child, et cetera. But within the urban communities and other low-income structures, oftentimes those single parents, okay, Kathleen knows what I'm talking about, those single parents, they don't have the resources. They don't have the car to take them to go get the extracurricular things that we're talking about. Their libraries are lacking all of the resources that may be available within an urban structure. So we have to take all of that into consideration and maybe establish something within our community that will reach out to those in a very large number that are lacking resources or the ability to get to those things that we are talking about. Everybody can afford violin, although, yes, some will say there are individual nonprofit organizations that do offer these things for the less fortunate, but can we pick up through transportation? There are things that we have to add to our communities that will definitely afford the individual to take advantage of the opportunities that are available. And I think that there is what's lacking.
You know, one of the stories, Kathleen, that I always am very intrigued by, and this is a conversation that has come up amongst friends, when the president talks about how his mother would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and start training him and teaching him, making him do schoolwork right then and there, or just teaching him things about life and trying to make sure he was educated. And she did this every morning before he went to school at 4 o'clock in the morning. And the thing that I remember so much about having these conversations, you know, of course, during the 2008 presidential campaign, I used to hear a lot of my people say, huh, there's no way I would get up and do all that stuff. There's no way. That's just too much. And I'm saying, oh, my God, are you serious? Is it too much? Is it too much to invest that type of time and energy in your kid? Because, you know, the bottom line is that you will be an adult a lot longer than you would be a kid. And my thing is that if you're concentrating on your kids having fun, I'm not saying that your kids can't have fun. But what I am saying is that you have your number one priority as a parent is to prepare your kid to be a responsible adult. What say you? I'll give you the last word.
Well, I know you read my book, and in that book I said that I talk about the fact that I was up with Sean, and we were out practicing. Actually, I was training him in sports. At 4:45 in the morning, we were out on the track every day preparing him for his career in tennis. And then in the evening when we came home, we were studying as far as, you know, the academics and the book work and all that stuff. And it paid off tremendously. I think that maybe a lot of times our younger parents don't understand the sacrifice that is required to raise a child. If you, in fact, want your children to be in a better position than you are, it requires, you basically can forget sleeping and having a whole lot of parties on your behalf while your kids are in their young age. You have to be in there with them. You have to make sure that they are getting everything that they need academically. And now, with regards to the technology and how far advanced and how much more our kids have to deal with, all kids, particularly African-American kids, to make sure that we're on the same playing field, but we are at a higher level of understanding, because we can't just come in there just like everybody else. We really do have to come in stronger, smarter, faster, and more equipped in order to make sure that we can at least have the same opportunities. Look at the unemployment rate. We have to do it. So if it means getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, then you set your alarm clock, baby, and just get up. That's it.
That's it. Well said. What a very good end to a very, very good conversation, folks. We are still rolling. Coming up next, we're talking about college versus jail. Are there more African-American men in college or in jail? Should be an interesting conversation. It's The Serious Side here on the TGR's Radio Network. We'll be right back.
My best friend's sister, she had a lot of friends, just not enough time. So she got really good at texting while driving. I mean, she was amazing. But ever since the accident, everything has changed. She still has a lot of friends, but now she has no time. Texting while driving, it's dumb and it's deadly.
This is a test.
As we jump into the second set with laughter, a hearty laughter from top of the house. Welcome back in, folks. 347-850-1272.
It's still for women, by women. It's your resident, not from the South, Mom, Little Daughter.
Good Sunday morning to you, folks, and welcome into the serious side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Jazz Cafe.
Welcome back. You are tuning in to the True Purpose Development Show tonight.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network. Thank you.
So, we want to take a look at the truth. Are there more black men in jail or are there more black men in college? Just questioning this inception of a gang, gambit on the black community. What you need to ask yourself is, what is the typical age range of a college person's age range of someone in jail?
Welcome back. 10 minutes after the hour, it's the serious side of the TGRS. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS radio network, and I apologize. Apparently, you guys were involved in a private moment I was having off the air. BTR, well, you have so many issues with the dashboard. But listen, we're going to get to our third final topic for this evening, and it's, are there more African-American men in college or in jail? Now, to be perfectly honest with you, it's almost like comparing apples to oranges, because as you heard in the lead-in, the average age for college kids are between the ages of 18 and 25, and for people who are incarcerated, the average age is between 18 to 55. So the bottom line is once again, it's like comparing apples and oranges. But Kathleen, I'll go to you first on this. The fact that this is a question should be alarming enough, because trust me, believe it or not, whether we can say that we can't do the comparison, this is a question that we ask ourselves almost every day in this community. Why do we have so many black men in jail versus in college? What say you?
Did you say Kathleen?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm glad you took the words out of my mouth. Why aren't we having this conversation every single day? And then we have arguments about it as to, you know, what the actual numbers are. I know that people were saying that it is not true, that for a certain number of years it was true that there were more black men in prison than in college. And then, it, you know, the numbers turned around. Anyway, the issue is, the reason that it comes up is not because there are so few black men in college, which happens to be true, though, but because there are so many black men in prison. Those numbers are topping every other race and ethnicity in this country, in the United States. The other issue, as I'm sure everybody on the line and everybody listening has heard this over and over again, we do know that the United States begins to target our kids in the third grade. And looking at those third grade standardized test scores, they determine how many kids they forecast the number of prisons they want to build in the coming years. So they look at our kids in underprivileged communities and look at their test scores and make a prediction that they will not only have a run-in with the law, but that they will be incarcerated by a certain age, and they start building prisons based on that. So we have to also remember that the prison, again, the prison system is the industrial system of prisons, is a business. And they are not concerned about the fact that they are well-populated or that they're well-populated with black men. And the numbers now are also increasing for black women, so we have to be, you know, looking at that as well. It is another very serious issue, and the fact that we have to look at what we're doing with our children from a very young age, again, looking at education, and also making sure that we get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, if that's what it takes, to make sure that our kids stay out of the prison system, especially our boys, training them so that they understand how to interact with the police if they have to. And I could go on. I'm going to stop right here. But this topic gets me really angry.
Well, it should, and the thing is, that's the reason why we're talking about it, because the bottom line is that, you know, a lot of the things we talk about here on the serious side, Dr. O'Day, you know, to me, contributes to the problem, the overall problem. And I don't want people to sit here and think, oh, it's an all-black show and things of that nature, but the bottom line is that we have to be able to take care of ourselves first. If we can't take care of ourselves, how can we expect to take care of anyone else? Those numbers are very alarming. I mean, the report that I read, I think it came out to like back in 2005, there were a little less than a million young men, black African-American men were in college, and the number was probably at about between 800,000 to 900,000 African-American men in prison. I mean, those numbers are crazy and alarming, and it is, to me, a problem that we have to get under control, because if we don't control that, we can have shows forever, and we're going to be talking about the same thing 10 years from now. What say you?
I say that is very true, and I'm glad you brought out the point that we're not trying to portray an all-black show, because that's not it, and we do have to have some measure of ground within our own race. This is true. But it is alarming, of the numbers. I believe that it again contributes to the situation financially within a lot of the urban communities and the lack of resources. There's as a result. I do an after school program for teachers, parents, and students, and it's to bring out the point of depression and stress. I believe that in young teens, young girls, who have the ages of 13, 14, that they're suffering in a major way with depression and stress. It affects their grades, okay? We wonder why the, you know, the academically in the urban communities, they're at a lower percentile of success than those in a suburban community. Then you have the young black men, 16, 17. Because they do not have young men around them a lot of times. There's so many, it's like almost impossible to have, it seems impossible to have a mentor per young man. There are a lot of young men where they're in the age of 16, 17, where they deal with depression and stress in a different way than the young girl. They're coming into adulthood and no one's paying attention to their transition. No one's looking at their transition. So they're forced to also wear the weight of the world on their back to say, man, when I'm 18, and some parents are saying, you're out of here at 18, or you have to make some choices, you're a grown man. But all the way up until that time, a lot of them are lacking banking skills. They don't understand how to live, how to make their own appointments, their doctor's appointments, and things of that nature. At 17, you know, teen in high school, parents, you need to let it go. Start weaning the kids off, okay? Letting them make some calls, standing over them, ensuring, you know, helping them out, helping them become comfortable in their transition. Our young men are dealing with that mentally, and it wears on their physical state, it wears on their ability, not ability. But it impacts their choices. It impacts their choices, and they make non-favorable choices in their life, which lands them in jail.
Right. You're absolutely correct. 15 minutes after the hour is the serious side. Mr. Elliott, one of the things that we talked about here, that we always talk about here, is what's going on within our community, what's going on within our race. Now, here's the deal, and we just talked about jobs in the last segment, but a lot of the reasons, a lot of reasons why our guys are in jail, a lot of people that look like us are in jail because, they get involved with the drug gang. They want to sell drugs. They want the finer things in life, so we sell drugs instead of going out and getting a job. But the reason why we can't go out and get a job, because in most cases, most of these young men's cases, they don't have the skill sets to do that. So, do you see how this is what Mufasa would say, the circle of life? It's a very vicious cycle, and something has to happen to change the course, to change the conversation, to change the channel. What say you?
Well, Jay, of course, man, and it resorts back to education. I'm going to stay on that soapbox as long as I live. Without education, man, it's the key to it all. Our young men, if you look at the inner city neighborhoods, man, what are they seeing? They're seeing the dope men that have the fancy cars, the flashy cars, and, the jewelry and all the women that are flocking to them. So what do they want? They want that lifestyle, too. They don't want to have to work hard for it. They want it. It's a fast buck to get into the dope game and make some money. I worked with a guy that used to be a drug dealer, and this guy told me he got into the drug game because he had no other opportunities out there. But, once the opportunity presented himself, I guess he got out of it because he's no longer doing it. But the bottom line is, that's all they see. And it's fast, quick, easy money, but they don't know all the characteristics that come along with being in that game. The game is going to get you either locked up or dead. So, these are all the opportunities that these young men have.
But I think a lot of them, Kathleen, it's a risk that they're willing to take because the bottom line is, what's the alternative? If I can't, I'm not going to go work at McDonald's because that's beneath me. I can't make enough money at McDonald's. And so what I'm going to do, I'm going to either go rob and steal or I'm going to sell drugs, which you know, in turn, ends me. I end up in prison. It's a risk that I'm willing to take because I want the money. The money is what it's all about. And it's just a very dangerous game that our people are playing.
Well, yeah, it is. But you know what, this is a deal. The bottom line is when we look at, and again, we're going to bring up that education, when we look at the United States of America nationally, the graduation rate from high school, I'm sure I said this before on the show, is approximately 50% for African American males. In my own city, New York City proper, the graduation rate for African American males is 28% from high school.
Mm.
So, and when we look at, you look at the stats and what's expected, if you don't graduate from high school, the likelihood is that you are not going to be even eligible to work at McDonald's in some cases, or in lower paying jobs or minimum wage paying jobs. Now listen, minimum wage is $7.50 an hour. You can't even buy 2 gallons of gas for your car with $7.50 an hour. So when we start talking about the fact that, yeah, hey, they want the money, it sounds like a bad thing. But when you think about it, in order to survive in this country right now today, you better have some money. And if you can't get a job, then sometimes the choices that you make are not going to be that grand. Sometimes those choices are going to take you into a life of crime. So the thing, it is what Mufasa says, the circle of life. And we have to intervene somewhere to make sure that, you know, people can survive and they can live. One last thing. These young men also, they are men. They're men at their core. And many of them are coming up in single-parent households headed by women. And when they turn around and look at their moms, and their moms are struggling and can't afford to put food on the table, can't keep them in the house till the foreclosure, mom may have lost a job, there's other kids. These are young men that sometimes have to stand up and be a man before they're even 18 years old to try and take care of a family that they didn't even father. These men want to take care of their mothers, and they go out there, and a lot of times they make that decision to sell drugs or do something that is not legal so that they can take care of their brothers and sisters. It's not all about a car and a Mercedes-Benz. They're making decisions to help their family survive. And not like I want them to do that, but we have to have something available for these families to help them out. And they're going to run right back down to the fathers. We have to get these fathers back in the family and make sure that we can educate these boys so they're going to high school and graduating and not selling drugs. It's not a good thing to have to make.
I just wanted to add to that before we continue. Is that fine? We have to, very simply, there is a lack of empowerment. There is a lack of empowerment within the urban communities, within these young men that are 16 and 17. And I have to say, I know we're getting ourselves, our own homes together within our race, but this is across the board. This is across the board. I've seen on the other side where there's just a lot of alcoholism on another level, okay? So this is across the board. This age group is very critical for our young men, and yes, the fathers have to step in, but you know what? The fathers need a mental transformation as well, because they are lacking empowerment, thereby they're not knowing what to tell the children. I've seen men do it all the time. When they're talking to the young men, they're talking to them with the, I mean, it'll scare the heck out of you, because they're telling them, well, you know, man, you're barely going to get a job. They don't want you to have a job, so you'll be lucky if you get X, Y, Z, and you know, I've been in the plant for 30 years. You know, this is how they talk to them, and they give them an expectation of no hope. So we need empowerment, and we have to pay attention to them. We have to pay attention to them, and not put them right out there at 18 and say, okay, be a man, dude. There it is. Make it happen. When no one paid attention.
22 minutes after the hour is the serious side of the TGRS. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS radio network. We're talking about black men. Are there more black men in college than there are in prison? And, you know, the conversation is taking on a very good turn, and I'm loving it. But let me throw this out at you, because, you know, there are so many shows out there, Ms. Delian, that talks about these types of things. You can find hundreds of them here on VTR Radio. You can listen to your normal radio, and you always have these types of shows talk about what we should do to improve the African American community. But here's the deal, and here's my question to you. Bottom line is this. that as much as we want to rant and rave about certain things and certain things that happen in our community, there are programs out there that can reach out to these young men. There are situations, mentors, there are big brother programs out there that can help some of these guys. Isn't a situation where, you know, you can take the horse to the water, but you can't make him drink. Doesn't that exist? Doesn't that play a role in this as well? Because we're talking as if it doesn't. There's no programs out there for African-American kids and young men to learn how to be men. That's not necessarily true, is it?
Well, you gotta look at the broad spectrum. Kathleen hit the nail on the head with this one, where these young men are seeing their mothers struggle. And they need that money fast because, I mean, these programs do exist, Jay. That goes without saying. But I gotta feed my little brother, my little sister who's struggling right now, who can't eat right now. I mean, you gotta look at the broad spectrum. There are programs out there that are gonna help. And then, are we educated enough to find these programs? Are we going to look to find these programs and then out of all these programs, are we going to take that much time to invest into these programs and while my family is struggling to eat or a place to live?
Well, it's tough. It's a very tough situation, and I understand it to a certain degree. I've never experienced it, but I know a lot of people who have. And Kathleen brought up a very good point about, you know, in some cases, it's not all about the bling-bling. It's all about trying to make sure my family can pay the rent and do the things that they need to do. But the bottom line is that, you know, that doesn't make it right. And so, you know, the question is, how do you help? Because we talk about people being on welfare. You know, we had a show last year talked about welfare, and people were like, oh, folks need to get off welfare. Folks need to get off welfare. And you do have people that abuse the situation. There's no doubt about that. But that's like anything in life, Kathleen. Folks will find ways to be dishonest. When Rita hit, folks found ways to get the little free credit cards, and they were out buying plasma TVs when that money was supposed to be for folks who were affected by the hurricane. So folks will find ways to be dishonest. And you have to say, listen, a certain percentile of the population are going to be rotten regardless of what you do. Well, let's talk about the people who fell into the game by accident, and now they find themselves behind bars. I mean, is it too late for us to say to kids, let's use your example, for example here. Let's use the scenario that you brought up. Here I am. I'm looking at my mother and my sister and my brother starving. I have a choice. Do I continue to try to improve myself, or do I try to find a quick way to make a buck? If a kid came to you and asked you that question, Kathleen, what would you tell them?
I'm going to tell them that it's not okay to make a quick buck.
What would you tell them to do? What would you tell them to do? If they came to you with that, here's my dilemma, Ms. Williams. What do I do next? Tell me. Guide me in the right direction.
All right. This is what I would tell them. And this is what, you know, and this is not conjecture either, because I actually do talk to these young men that are going through this internet situation, and some who have been there and did their time in jail who are also working with these young people. You talk about those programs, Jay. Yes, they exist, but I have a mom that came to me, and she waited for 4 years to get a big brother assigned to her son. So basically, you tell the kids, listen, I know it may seem like today that that's the answer, but when you're in prison 5 years from now and your family really can't survive and they don't even have you, then what is going to be the answer? We can't have an immediate fix to this, but look, let me help you. I'm going to help you with your academics and make sure that you can get through school. Let's find some programs and get some food on the table so your mom and your brother and sister can eat. You know, the food pantries right now are a big deal. And let me tell you something. The people that are standing in the food pantry lines right now, they are the people that were working and driving Benzes just a few years ago. The food pantry lines are hard to get through. So it's not easy. And that's the thing where you have to tell them, look, it's not going to be easy. But selling the friggin' drugs ain't easy either. And doing time in prison is not easy either. So we have to help each other. And that is really what it's going to come down to, showing people their options and letting them know it's not going to be a quick fix. But if you do it the other way,
the legal way that you can have a longer impact, not only on your current family, your mom and her family, but on your own. Don't you want to have kids of your own, and you don't want your kids to come visiting you on that bus and stripping down so that they can come and talk to you through a window?
You know, one of the things that I saw during one of the programs on MSNBC, if you watch MSNBC over the weekend, they usually have a show called Lockdown where they show, you know, they visit different prisons throughout the country and they, you know, spend time there. It's like almost like a documentary. Mr. Elias, you know, one of the saddest shows I watched was a young kid crying for his daddy. His daddy was behind the glass and he just started crying and beating on the glass, my daddy. And it was so emotional that not only did people who were involved in this particular situation really started crying, you saw the prison guards' eyes start welling up as well. And it's just one of those situations where it's tragic, but it's almost like collateral damage. And what I mean by that is this, is that in a way, I think this is how Americans are overall. I mean, the bottom line is that before it gets better, it's going to get worse. And there are some people who are just going to fall victim to the circumstances. We can't change that. It's almost like the people want President Obama to wave a wand and all of a sudden the economy is back where it should be and everything is hunky-dory. There will be people who will never have a job again. There will be people who are faced with the dilemma, do I continue down this path of righteousness or do I turn down this path and take up a life of crime? Because the bottom line is that I'm hungry, my family's hungry, and unless I do something very, very soon, it's going to be curtains for us. I mean, when you imagine those situations, and there are people who are out there who are dealing with these situations right now, Ms. Elias, what can we do as a society to help these people?
Well, Jay, you know, I think we forgot the fact of reaching back to grab one and bring them up with us. Now, I think we forgot that, but we also got to look at the fact that, hell, some of us can't even reach back to grab anybody because we don't have it to do. So, I mean, anything that you can do to reach back and help, I mean, if it's just your time to reach back and mentor to a kid to make sure that kid knows the right way wrong and what's wrong with what he's doing, you know, that you're suddenly putting that into his ear to say, hey, this is what you need to do, man. I mean, I see you heading down the wrong path, man. I might not be able to help you financially, but here, let me take you somewhere where I can get you some help and show you what's going on. We, as a society, man, we turn a blind eye to everything and say, well, that's not my problem, that's yours. And I think we just need to reach back and try and bring some people up with us, man. That's the only thing you can do at this point in time.
The bottom of the hour is the serious side of the TGRS broadcasting live from the Smooth Jam Sands Cafe every Sunday right here at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time on the TGRS Radio Network. And Dr. O'Day, I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Kathleen Williams. If a young man comes to you and says, listen, my family is at home right now hungry, okay? I have no opportunity to do anything. The only way I can get cash in my home is to go out here and sell drugs. Tell me, what must I do? And help me with my problem right now. Don't give me this, you know, once again, like I said in the last hour, you know, there are such things as interview questions and interview answers. Give me a real answer to my situation. Help me resolve this. What would you say to a young black man that came to you with that particular question? What would you say?
First of all, I would want to talk to his mother. And would bring it in as a fam. I would bring his mother in on it, and I would offer her resources, because that's what I do. I would offer her resources, first of all, to help her to remedy her lack, in short, holding her hand via that way. Then I would begin to empower that young man to make a different choice. And empower him based on what he's given me. And you're saying, he's saying, I'm going to go out here, I'm going to go to the streets, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm going to empower him to make a different choice. The fact that by you doing this, this will yield other results, possibly some other results. 99% of the time it's going to yield those results. How would that impact your mother and your family at that point? That's not going to do anything. I would help him to realize that even though he's in that situation, a very negative situation, that he can then, even also as a young child,
he can make a choice to even think positive and to help her in a way that she could be brought out of that situation in a major way forever. And by helping them, inviting them to positive thinking, and also creating a vision in their mind of them being out of that situation, which is very impactful. It seems unrealistic, and some people may say, well, that doesn't make sense. Well, it makes a lot of sense, because what they will do by creating the positive thinking, they will cause for positive things to come to them, as opposed to him going out and bringing negativity back to the home. Because making that choice to hit the streets, to deal and to become a street thug, that's not going to do anything but create negative energy. So I would have to invite them to the great possibility and the opportunity of holding on to the positive thought, creating a positive thought if they don't have one, and that yielding them the result that they ultimately want, which is his mom to be out of that situation. And I, of course, would bring the mother in.
Well, that's a good answer. Let me ask you a question, Kathleen. You brought this up, and it's something that we haven't talked about, African-American women in prison. I mean, the numbers are staggering there just as much, but we don't focus on that. Why do you think we don't focus on our black mothers being in prison? Why is that not a part of the conversation, per se?
Two things, and if you don't mind, I just want to add one thing to what I do for the men.
Absolutely.
And this is something that I actually do. Again, you know, I don't know if all of you know that this is the area that I work in. The other thing that I do with the men is the young men, I partner them with men in the community. Whether those men are black or they're white or they're Latino, I find somebody in the community who will mentor that young man and help him to understand manhood and those same issues that I talked about before. I can articulate them, but I'm not a man, so it's not something that I feel internally. So I make sure that they are working with men, and the men who have been there and understand what they're going through. And a lot of these men, Malik Carey, who used to be in the light, selling drugs and so forth, did some time in prison. Not a whole lot, but did some time in prison, and is now completely transformed and working with young men, helping them to make right choices. So a lot of these guys, you'll see them, the ones that I send guys to as mentors, they'll be on Adam Where Art Thou on the show. The other thing, as far as the young women, why don't we focus on them as much? One of the reasons that we don't is because usually men dominate the conversation, and we are so concerned about our men that we haven't even caught up with the fact that the numbers of the young women are increasing. I'm not saying that negatively, but I'm saying that we have been focusing on that, the numbers of black men, because that's what we hear about so much. And we're just starting to see the numbers of the young women increasing. And again, I bring that right back to the family, right back to the fatherlessness that we're experiencing in the black family. And these young ladies a lot of times don't know what it is to be a young woman. They're making some choices that are not positive. A lot of times they're getting strung out because of the company that they happen to keep. They're hanging with these young men, and they're making bad choices, and now they're going into lives of crime. We're seeing more and more young women getting involved in gangs and gang violence as well. So it's something that we also have to pay attention to, because, you know, where the men go, the women are going to follow. Where the women go, the men are going to follow. It's not like it's exclusive. And, you know, does men do one thing and women do another? No. And now the women are getting arrested. So we do, you know, it is something else that we have to look at. And a lot of people that are working, I got a call from Rikers Island just last week. Rikers Island is one of the prisons here in New York City. And they asked me to come in, and I'm going to come in and do some workshops with the young ladies. And a lot of these women are having babies in prison. And a lot of them have babies on the outside that are going into the foster care system. So this is a very serious, cyclical situation that we have to work on. Because when the kids are in foster care, then they're going through, you know, hard times, bad situations, they don't have money, they start to lose costs, and then they end up in the prison system if we're not careful. So it is a huge problem that we do need to look at and talk about. So I'm thankful that you're having this conversation today, Jay. It's important. We really have to have more of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're having a conversation because the bottom line is that we want to try to talk about things that will stimulate the mind. We want to talk about things that would make people say, maybe I need to pick up the phone and volunteer. Maybe I need to do some of the things that can help improve our communities. And our communities are black, white, yellow. It doesn't really matter. But you have to find the root of the problem. And the root of the problem in some cases is the fact that people are not educated. And when people are not educated, they make very dumb decisions. And there are those who are, you know, once again, who falls into that category by default. And what I mean by that is that you may be one of the most educated people on the face of the planet. You may have all the master degrees and things that you need to be a very successful person. But because of the economic situation, because of the economy, because of the fact that you can't find jobs, you too may be in a situation where you're contemplating doing something that may not be above board. And so you may find yourself in prison just like the common criminal, which makes you no different from that individual. So there are such a thing, Dr. O'D, as, you know, bad things happen to good people.
And I have to agree with you there. This is very, very true. But you know what? In all cases, the things that we actually go through in our lives, if we take the approach and the opportunity of looking at it as an opportunity for us to transform and to become a greater person, to realize better ourselves, who we are, the power and strength in that, the ability that we have to create our own happiness, even within the midst of turmoil and struggle, then we ourselves can definitely become a greater people, a greater person. So I think that it's very important for us to invite individuals to the opportunity and choice to create happiness for themselves. And in the midst of the circumstance, most people that have been very, very successful in life were those that came from great struggle, that realized their strength at a young age and pushed past that. The resilience that came with that, the understanding and clarity of opportunity, making something out of nothing, that goes a long way. And it goes for a great cause in your life and others. So, I mean, bad things, we can look at it that way, but it doesn't do us any good. We have to look at it as an opportunity for us to experience strength and happiness that is eternal.
Okay, fair enough. Let's get out to the phone lines. We have a caller from Phoenix, Arizona. T-Smitty. T-Smitty, welcome into the Serious Side. What's your comment, my friend?
How you guys doing?
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm all right. Hey, am I right now? I read a topic was talking about blacks not getting hired out of college and stuff.
Well, that was the earlier topic, but you can talk about that. Right now we're talking about African-American men. Are there more in college? Or are there more in prison? Do you have a comment on that, or you can comment about it, anything you want? Just go ahead.
Hey, can I talk about both real quick?
You can talk about what, I'm sorry? About
okay,
what?
I can hit both real quick and kind of tie in. First,
okay,
black not getting hired out of college. We don't own any companies, no businesses. Because most people hire who looks like them. And that's the biggest problem. We don't own anything. We don't have an infrastructure. And where you talked about, like, the African-American college and prison, there are more. There's only 2.3 million people in prison. That's true. And there's way more black men in college than in prison. And then also the numbers where you have, like, repeat offenders as well. But at the same time, you have to look at, like, where you home and people growing up, and also being black, is that once you get out, we don't own those businesses or corporations, so we can't even give the young brother a shot when he wants to do right.
Yeah, you see, ex-convicts, they don't have an opportunity to reform themselves because they have that blotch in their record. I agree with what you're saying there.
Yeah, and plus we don't own any businesses so that we can give that young brother a shot, because the white man get a shot because he got white people own the places, but we don't own anything. You know, so we never hire who looks like us. And the one thing I had to get back with late on the struggle, my thing is, I was telling you a saying, you know, she had a great comment. But I feel like as black people, we got to get over, like, you know, I know she meant, like, nothing comes easy in life. But a lot of times, right, check it out, the struggle is not place our kids in position where they don't have to go through what we did in life. And like, for example, not paying a big college loan. We gotta have our kids have a better entry point than we do.
Right. I agree with that. Thank you so much for your comments, Steve Smitty. Mr. Elias, I'll give you the last word of his set, but let me preface it with a question first. You know, he brought up a very excellent point when he talks about the fact that we don't own anything and the fact that, you know, ex-convicts, they don't get opportunities to reform because they have that blot or that blemish on their record. So I'll give you the final word on the set and let you close out.
Well, Jay, he's 100% right. We don't own a lot. But hey, does it also go back to what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago? If we did own it, would we hire our own people? Wouldn't we give our own people a chance to get hired? Once again, man, I'll close it out with saying education is the key. Without education, you can't do anything. You can't get a job. You can't progress in life, man, because you're not educated to know what's going on around you. You're dumbfounded to what your surroundings are, and things aren't important to you. Like we talked earlier, when we were saying, you know, how important was the government shutdown and why should we care? Well, if you don't know that question, why should we care, then what's the purpose of even, you know, trying to find out what education is about, man? If you don't have education, man, you don't have anything.
Well said. All right, that's the bold net. But we're not done yet, folks. Coming up, before we go, a quick look at some stories that made headlines this past week in Chatterbox. Final thoughts from the chat room. It's the serious side. Don't go anywhere, but we'll wind you down. Right here on the TGR's Radio Network. We'll be right back. Keep it here.
dobrej te sprawy związane z dalszym rozwojem wojskowej kraju.
The week that was in the news.
Aiden Elliott seems like your typical video game loving 8-year-old.
Finally got one.
But what happened recently at this elementary school was hardly typical.
I kinda blow it up a little.
More than a little. Aiden, in a class for kids with behavior problems, became enraged. Spitting, throwing chairs, even threatening teachers and students with a sharp piece of wood he held like a knife.
I said, I'm going to kill you once you get out of that room.
How come you said that?
Well, I was really angry.
Soon, police arrived. Aiden told them,
I will kill you, mother effers. He had told the teachers the same thing. If they came out, they were going to die.
The officers decided their best option was to pepper spray the second grader.
It was a situation that had to be diffused and it had to be done very quickly. No one went home injured that day.
Aiden's mother, Mandy, thinks police went too far.
I do think it was excessive force, and we are filing a complaint. He's never hurt anybody in the past.
Glenn Beck and Fox News have announced that they are parting ways.
This is clearly a marriage that went sour. Falling ratings, fleeing advertisers, and like many divorces, it had at least one partner that kept on saying things that, well, that went pretty far.
Well, 2 and 8, I hit 2 beautiful 3 was in there that just rolled through the green and they get up and down. And 15 was a careless 3-putt, so bad speed in the first putt. So, made a bunch of mistakes in the green. But.
It's time for Before We Go, a quick look at stories that made headlines this past week. And I tell you what, that first story, Miss Billy, has the young kid that was pepper sprayed by police. Now, a lot of people are saying, hey, you shouldn't pepper spray an 8-year-old, but my God, after you hear the details, they should have knocked his ass out. What say you?
I gotta agree, Jay. I gotta agree with pepper spraying a man. Wow. Yeah, that's, I gotta agree. Where did this kid come from, get this language problem, and why would he come at him like that?
I don't know. Maybe there was an inspirational reason for it. Let's go to Dr. O'Day. Dr. O'Day, should they have pepper sprayed this young kid?
He's an inspirational reason. No, he should not have pepper sprayed the little kid. He was holding a little board in his hand, and you know what? Could have grabbed him. Those men could have grabbed that little kid. I don't care how irate he was. They did not have to pepper spray him. And the kid is angry. He made a comment that his mom was not at home. His mom is never home, is what he said.
Wow.
So, there's a bigger picture here, and we need to not focus on the... what he said out there. You come off the road, I'm going to kill you. Okay, you and your little 4x4. Try it. Honey, come on.
Okay, Kathleen, I'm going to go to you now. The thing is, this is the third time police have been called out on this little guy. He had a very sharp object that he had. He was ripping things off the wall. He was really in a tizzy. Are you on the side of Dr. O'Day's man that this young man should have not been pepper sprayed?
Listen, I'm on your side, Jay. They should have whipped that little boy's
The pepper spray. I'll say it for you.
They should have been spanking him before he got to that point, too. We talked about that corporal punishment, but they should have been spanking. That package sounded like he should have been spanked when he was still in the womb.
No, he's angry. He's an angry kid. Someone needs to connect with him. They need to talk to his mother, who doesn't have much to say about the whole situation. I mean, she couldn't say anything when the kid said, well, my mom's not home.
I'm going to tell you what my mother would tell you, okay? You want me to show you transformation? I'll show you some transformation. I'll show you something to be transformed about. Let me empower this, all right?
Oh, my God, you guys are crazy. Glenn Beck, he is leaving Fox. Happy days are here again, Mr. Elias, man. Fox has got tired of their number one TV show. That has to say a whole lot if they're kicking him to the curb. Even Fox is saying he's crazy. What say you?
Hey, well, it's all been said right then and there, Jay. I mean, this guy is crazy. And so I look at him and he's just standing, cries on the air, and oh, he's for America, and he's this, he's that. Man, but anytime you put out, like, racist stuff against the president, man,
How are you for America? You're not even backing the president.
Well, no, he's not. He's on Fox. Of course he's not backing the president. Dad. Come on, you don't expect that, do you? Come on.
All right.
Now, let's go to our resident sports person, Kathleen Williams. Now, Kathleen, Tiger really kicked tail yesterday, but he struggled yesterday. Do you think Tiger can win his fifth green jacket at the Masters?
Absolutely. I definitely think Tiger can win. As a matter of fact, I watched that whole special he had on over the weekend. It was incredible. I think Tiger's back, everybody. I don't think that we need to be concerned about whether or not he can win. Not only is he back, he's back, and he's bigger and better than before. So I want you to keep your eye on Tiger Woods. This man is going to rock and roll. Seriously. He's not out. He's not down. That's my boy.
Tiger Woods. Oh, my Lord. And on that note, we're transitioning to... All right, folks. It's time for Chatterbox. Final thoughts from the chat room. Of course, I'll go first as always. My first one is from my partner in crime, Self-Guided. He says, we do not prepare our children for childhood, or adulthood, I should say. Mr. Elias, what do you have?
I got one from the lovely gracious one. She said, America's new slavery, the black man in prison.
There you go. And I have one from Fabulous Kitty. She says, sometimes we don't want to study the truth about us because the truth hurts. And why don't you close this out with one more, Mr. Elias?
This one's from Self Guy. He said, I'm qualified. Why do I have to dumb myself down?
A lot of Americans think that way. All right, folks, we're not done. We'll be back with our final thoughts after this. It's The Serious Side on the TGRS Radio Network.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jim Howard. 21-year-old Rory McIlroy continues to lead the Masters Golf Tournament after a strong and steady third-round performance. NPR's Tom Goldman reports that McIlroy has a four-stroke advantage going into today's final round.
Saturday is called moving day in golf tournaments as players jockey for position before the final round. But on Saturday at Augusta, not a lot of movement from the golfers near the top, which helped Rory McIlroy keep and extend his lead. McIlroy continued to show the kind of calm and patience not often found in a 21-year-old, but as he said, I'm finally feeling comfortable on this golf course. It showed. His long birdie putt on 17 was the highlight. The roar of the crowd caused Tiger Woods, a hole ahead, to step away from his shot. Woods continued his erratic play. After a sizzling 66 on Friday, he shot a 74 Saturday. In his words, I just made nothing. McIlroy has held at least a share of the lead each day of the tournament. Tom Goldman, NPR News.
I'm Jim Howard, NPR News in Washington.
Well, another Sunday morning down. A great show as always. We appreciate you, the listener, for being involved. And GOG had a commitment today, so he wasn't here, but he'll be back next Sunday. No worries. And don't forget to check out Adam or Arthur tonight, 6 p.m. right here, Central Standard Time on the TGR's Radio Network. Real quick, Kathleen, what's going on tonight?
We're actually going to be talking with June Brown, and she's going to talk. She is actually a social worker who works with troubled teens, and we're also going to be talking with Sugar Ray, who is a young man who grew up in a very compromised neighborhood, who's doing some fabulous things with young men right now. So the conversation that we had today will continue tonight on Adam, Where Art Thou?
Good stuff. And on that note, it's time for our final thoughts, and we're running a little late. We'll start with Dr. Princess Aldea's final thoughts.
Great show today, Jay. I just wanted to expound on what the young lady said in the chat room. The truth hurts. At times, the reality of the truth is too much to bear, yet it's the truth that will set you free all the time. I want to invite everyone to truth, become educated and self-empowered so that you are abreast of what's going on in your life and around you.
Thank you so much. Kathleen Williams, final thoughts.
Get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and help your kids out. Make sure that they are going to be in a better position than you are. Being helping your children is really the only way they're going to make it through this world.
Mr. L.E.S., final thoughts.
Man, look at every situation as a whole. Don't look at every situation through small glasses, man. You got to look at every situation as a whole. Reach back, help somebody out, because you know something, you never know what that person can be or how you can help them.
All right. And since GOG's not here, you are the man today, my friend. So if it's Sunday and we're talking serious stuff. What time is it, my friend?
It's time for the serious side of the J. Rowell Show.
Oh, GOG's going to be a little jealous. All right, folks, that is it. Enjoy the remainder of your weekend. God bless you. Appreciate you. And remember, if it is Sunday, we're talking serious side on the serious side. Oh, I just screwed that up. All right, guys, listen. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Once we get back here on the TGR's Radio Network.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.